Okay, we're recording. It is 5:32, Thursday, March 2nd.
February.
I'm sorry.
Not yet.
February, I'm sorry.
Quick month.
Yeah.
February.
Goodbye.
We're off to a good start.
Yes. Quantum, yeah, it's almost, what did the groundhog say? Yeah, let me put my glasses on. All right, so on the work session is an item that we've heard from a constituent before. This is a little different. We're hearing from a neighborhood now, a residential area, that has now a couple families that are raising chickens. So this conversation will be based on chickens, but most ordinances that we have encountered are basically include chickens in a general farm animal category. So if you'll remember, the first constituent had an issue, I believe he lived up on Emmerich Road, with chickens running around loose crossing the road. I don't know why.
Why?
But
tell me you know why. Come on.
Other side thing.
He would find them on his property, on his porch, and in his garage. Obviously, frustrating. So we looked at, you know, what we could do about that. It seems like that situation is cleared up. It seems like the neighbors have addressed that issue. But it has now resurfaced regarding chickens in residential areas. And coming from the village, I know we had an ordinance in the village. The village is a slightly different animal in that there's pretty high density in the village. It's probably the equivalent of a R12-5 in most respects. But we still have rural areas where you could actually have an active farm. But the village just does not allow farm animals within its limits. I've been asked to consider and look for legislation in other towns that we might be able to mirror to control chickens specifically in residential areas. I would say from R 40 down. That's the gist of it. Some of the complaints are that the chickens are drawing in nuisance animals such as foxes,
coyotes,
and river cats. I've never heard of a river cat.
It's a marten.
But it's a marten. That there's, I don't know if there has been or there could be odors emanating from the outside chicken coops. And the aesthetics of really having chickens in your neighbor's yard in an area that when you moved to it, you didn't necessarily think that there would be farm animals. And so I think we need to think broader, because it might be chickens today, it might be a goat tomorrow, it could be a donkey. We do have some people here that may want to comment on it, but this is the first time that we might talk about or consider such legislation. We wouldn't be reinventing the wheel here. You know, I think it's pretty common. It's commonly addressed in suburban communities. And although 85% of our land is agricultural, we do have some pretty high density housing. So, Jack, would you want to add to that before we get into discussion?
Yeah, because I can come up here.
Yeah, Jack Corey, who also happens to be chair of our planning board, is making a comment.
This is for guests, that chair.
See you.
I thought I was going to see you.
Chair.
See you later.
No longer wanted.
See ya.
We'll invite you back.
Sorry, Jerry. I come here tonight not in any capacity with the planning board, but as a officer of the Seneca Gardens Homeowners Association and as a resident of Lysander. to talk to you. Joe is correct. We have two chicken coops that have been built, and people are raising chickens in the backyards of our Seneca State development. One of the families, not the Dolphs, recently purchased three pigs. Now, we're pretty sure at this point they're the little baby pigs, miniature pigs that stay in the house, but we don't know. So I was asked by the Homeowners Association to research this. And I put this together for you. Give you a little background. I've researched the legislation. I went to every township office that surrounds Lysander, and Joe gave me the information from the village. The reality is that the town of Lysander is the only town in central New York, this area, that does not have specific legislation in its codes to restrict, prohibit the sighting of farm animals. Joe's talking about chickens. I'm talking about farm animals, all of them. Chickens, of course, are. Nowhere in our code is there anything in there that deals with this issue. The only thing that is defined in the Lysander code is a farm. What's the definition of a farm? Basically 5 acres or greater. No definition of farm animals, no definition of anything. Every other municipality, and I have in here copies of all their codes.
Now, you said central New York or upstate New York?
I'm talking about every municipality that borders Lysander.
Okay.
The town of Lysander. No, I didn't reach out that far, Joe.
Okay. Well, that's a big area.
But I'm sure you could go online and you'd probably find that it's there. They all told me, their code officers, about the issues they've had in their areas with this and why they had to deal with it. I'm sure when the codes were put together for Lysander, they probably made the same assumption that the people in Seneca States made when they put their bylaws together, that there used to be common sense in the world, and you wouldn't have to think you'd have to put something in there to keep people from bringing farm animals into a R20 residential development. But the reality is today common sense is becoming a scarcer and scarcer commodity. The one thing that we would recommend is the code should define what farm animals are in its code. And here is a definition that's taken right out of one of the existing codes. I mean, I'm not going to recreate the wheel on anything here. Like you said, Joe, they're all over the place. But basically, this term includes all farm animals: horses, mules, donkeys, sheep, goats, pigs, cattle, livestock, geese, fowl, and poultry. And the village of Baldensville added, and wild or dangerous animals. In other words, there's things on farms now that never used to be there, and that's what that's to cover. There's two approaches that the other municipalities take, and I've drafted very crudely using their words, and I know Tony would do a much better job than I did, an example of what the legislation could look like for each of those approaches. The one approach is to define exactly where farm animals cannot be placed. And an example of that would be, no person shall maintain, house, or harbor any farm animals. It should be as defined in, and that's where that definition would go in the code. You'd have to reference it. In residential zoning, R10, R12.5, R20, and AR40. And in AR40, you would say that does not have a minimum of 5 acres in the town of Lysander. In other words, bring it to the definition of a farm.
So I want you to keep going, but for my benefit, an AR40 is not just an acre, it can be bigger than an acre?
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. basically all the zoning thing does is set the minimum size of
the
lot.
Just the minimum.
Yeah. Like Seneca Estates is zoned R20. There isn't an R20 lot in there. They're all R40 or bigger. But that's the way it's zoned.
And the other ones, 10, 12.5, and 20, there can't be anything in between those? Or can there ever be an R5 or an R7.8? Or
Not under our code.
Okay. No. So this will cover everything?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's all I want to know.
Yeah. The other way to approach it, and this is the one that most of them seem to have taken, is to define where they can be. Instead of saying where they can't be, you define where you can house them and site them. And that's usually written like farm animals as defined in this definition can only be maintained, housed, or harbored in areas zoned for agricultural use and must be sited on land with a minimum of 5 acres. And that's the way most of them approach it. And then you don't have to get into defining every zone and like that. And to your point, Joe, you're right. 85% of Lysander is agriculture, and that's where farm animals belong. They don't belong in residential developments.
So these two approaches, Jack, is something left out? Are they saying the exact same thing, or does one do something that the other one doesn't?
I think they're saying the same thing.
Just defining.
It just depends how you want to approach it.
The positive side or the negative.
Or the negative side, so to speak. Yes.
You can have them here, or you can't have them here.
So yeah. It's easier, in this case, I would suggest to say where you can have them, and then you don't have to get into the other part.
Well, the reason I ask is that, going back to that R40 thing, you can have not something in an agricultural area that's not R40 and have 4.5 acres.
Right, so you would allow.
You would allow
it. You have to allow it.
You would allow it in AR40 if it was 5 acres or more.
Right, so it's more language.
So what if it's not zoned AR40? It's like on Dingle Hole Road is what? It's
ag.
Ag. So what's the?
That would be 5 acres.
So my.
I mean, as this is, whatever you would decide if you move forward with something, but that's the definition of a farm. Under current Lysander code is 5 acres. Clay, Van Buren, they all have that 5 acre thing in their definition too. I have copies in here if you want.
Do they deal with pets?
Huh? No. We're just dealing with farm animals.
I understand.
Yeah, but a pig is a farm animal.
What?
A pig is a farm animal.
That's right.
But it's also a pet.
It's also a pet.
It can be a pet.
So you go and say, remove your pig.
I can have a pet chicken.
Pet chicken?
This, what you see, that's why they write their codes the way they do. Because the way people have been getting around Lysander is every time the code enforcement officer, and I've talked to him, shows up, they just say, that animal's my pet. And then he can't do anything. But if you, and that happens because Lysander never defined what a farm animal was in its code.
But the agriculture markets law defines what a pet is.
Yeah.
And a pet is any domesticated animal normally maintained in or near the household of the owner. Any domesticated. The animals include chickens and everything else. So the agriculture markets law, the state law, defines what a pet is. So for us to say that's not a pet, I don't think you can do that. That's why I think Tim has a problem citing somebody saying you can't keep that pet. And he said, why not? State says that's my pet. So I'm not trying to.
No, I understand what you're saying, but then I would just ask you, why is it that every other municipality has that law on their books and has no trouble enforcing it?
I'd like to see the situations where, I mean, I'd like to find out from, and I can easily do that.
Yes,
I know
go ahead,
the town
please.
Attorneys, and just say when you prosecute and somebody says it's my pet, what do you do?
Tony, can you do that again?
How do you enforce
it? A pet is any domesticated animal normally maintained in or near the household. So it doesn't have to be in the house. In or near.
All right.
Of the owner.
So pigs.
Well, they're talking about, I know why they write it that way, because some people keep their dogs in a kennel out there.
Or chickens in a coop. So
yeah, but chick. how you define a chicken as a pet.
Domesticated.
Well, it's domesticated.
The word domesticated.
Right. Domesticated is the key.
Yeah.
Can you domesticate a chicken? I don't know.
Yes, you see.
I don't know. There's nothing in the Ag and Markets law, by the way, that talks about chickens. It's poultry.
Well, that's what this term is, poultry.
They couldn't
poultry.
Live in the world.
I do not use chickens.
Yeah. No.
This is not a chicken law.
but in the same Ag and Markets law, they define pets as any domesticated, which includes poultry, the chickens.
Do they have a list?
Domesticated, no, meaning any, they can't live in the wild.
They're not wild, yeah.
So a chicken can't just take off and live in the wild.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he?
Well, if you have them in your house.
Chicken can live in the wild for about an hour.
It's a non-domesticated animal.
And then one of those river cats can get at it.
Well, he could live there. As long as he can find food, he'll live there as long as a wild turkey will.
I think when they say domesticated.
And a river cat can find a wild turkey, too.
I think when they say domesticated, they mean an animal that
lives in a house.
Or that you've brought to your property and lives with you.
Well, so, we should find out what
there's
doing,
there's, so
I mean, there's
obviously
there's a legal definition.
Yeah, obviously there's precedent.
So
if there's laws on the books,
write it, but.
There's precedent. It's I no doubt been challenged.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
Just need to do a little research. The other question I would have.
Yep.
You have a homeowners association.
Yep.
What have they done?
They are now in the process of amending their bylaws to exclude it because
that's
what we found out in our exercise is that of the homeowners association and the PUD, we're probably the only one that never had it put in there. They all have it in there.
Yeah.
They all base. They define. They have their own definition of domestic animals,
mm-hmm.
like Radisson.
Well, they can't. I mean, they're private, so they can do whatever they want to do as far as their homeowners. And that,
that's
the way to resolve the problem.
Well, that's one way, Tony. But there's so many communities that don't have homeowners associations.
I understand, but
and they're on like half acre lots. I mean,
but I don't think we've had any other situations, have we?
Yeah, but as Jack is pointing out, common sense has seemed to have disappeared. I mean, who's to say what's going to happen?
Yeah.
My sentiments are with Jack. I think you need to talk to other town attorneys, find out, because I think Joe's right on the money in saying, it may be a little gray in terms of how perfect the law is, but it's on the books, and these other towns seem to, and once you tell people this is on the books, it's not legal, maybe there's some, you find out. I think we're at the issue right now is you need to talk to other attorneys.
Yeah.
And we'll also have an opportunity in the Association of Towns meeting, should the motion pass, there's going to be 100 towns there, 100 supervisors.
That's perfect.
And when we get together, we'll just, what are you doing? What have you?
Jack, could you have Van Buren, Clay, and who else?
What, that I went to?
Village of Ballinsville.
Village of Ballinsville, Town of Scruple, Spawnville over there.
Okay.
And I can give you the copy of the regs. You can.
I can get them.
I've got them right here.
Yeah. Why don't you just?
I mean, I'll give them to you, the ones that I got. And
Jack, how many complaints or how many people came to you or came to the homeowners association?
Well, let's see. We have 108 families there, and I think 87 so far.
So you had a good turnout.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's just think about it reasonably. Let's forget about the law for a minute. You don't move into, and we're as high density as the village is almost. I mean, these developments around here, Indian Springs and other things, we're as high density as the village. You don't move into that type of area with the expectation of seeing chicken coops and chickens running around in yards and maybe goats, maybe sheep. I mean, I don't want to focus this directly on this.
Yeah.
We've had complaints about odor. I get up in the every morning. I listen to the chickens clucking across my street. They're out there clucking away. Thank God there's no roosters. Well, they don't need them to get eggs.
I think you're absolutely right, Jack. And whatever the law says, I can't imagine. To use an extreme example, New York City allowing chicken coops in neighborhoods. There's got to be some way to enforce this kind of common sense.
Well, my only question was, I just wanted to bring it to the board.
Yep.
Homing pigeons.
Put it in there.
Homing pigeons. New York City allows homing pigeons on rooftops.
Well, they allow peregrine falcons.
I don't
to
know if they're legal. I think
too.
Poultry covers homing pigeons.
Let's find out.
So we'll look at it.
Yeah, okay, but my only question would be this. You were the mayor of Ballinsville. Ballinsville probably has the most restrictive and the most severest penalties on its book. How come agri-markets definitions wasn't an issue there?
Because we don't have agricultural areas in the village. Nothing's zoned ag.
But ag only pertains to ag zones.
Exactly.
It doesn't pertain to residential zones.
Right.
So that definition has no meaning in R10, R12.5, or R20. It might in AR40, but not in those. That and those are the ones where you're really looking at an issue. I don't think agri-market definition applies in residential zones.
No.
Okay, that's just my point. Anyway, I just wanted to bring it to you. We're putting a petition together, and we'll get other people involved. And if you ever do bring this,
we might answer your question.
Oh,
yep.
Sure.
You're getting a petition together. It's the HOA. Okay, I'm glad.
That's all.
You know, there are two other. I don't want to overly complicate this, but there's two other issues associated with that, with these animals. One is noise. And, you know, we have, I got to believe, on the book, statutes against unreasonable barking of dogs.
We do.
The decibel level of a rooster is like twice what a dog bark is. And smell and smells. I mean, it just odor control. So, you know, I think we need to be thinking reasonably here in common sense.
Yeah, no.
I would urge the homeowners to do that. It's underway.
Good. But, and the other townships I talked to, their homeowners association have it. But the authority to enforce a restriction against comes at the town level. Homeowners associations have limited authority.
They'd have to go to court to enforce.
Exactly, right. Versus the town thing that just...
Right.
So you need both.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, we are doing it. Let me give this to you.
Ashley, you had a question?
Yeah. You said about ag and markets not applying non-agricultural zones, but I know that ag and markets includes laws about animal cruelty. It's got the definition of pets. So I guess my question is for Tony, how does that reconcile?
That applies, those things apply to everybody.
Okay.
You know, there's provisions in the ag and markets law that are just for poultry raising and farming, and you know, everything is separated. Food suppliers and what they can do and what they can't.
Here's Clay's. They define farm animals and domestic animals.
Okay.
And restrict it. Over here, you'll see they restrict it to 5 acres.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. For your
thank
time.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
Did you get any eggs from the chicken?
No.
Did they ever come over?
No, that would be sort of hypocritical. but just for the record, I'm not here to say put a law in place to ban chickens. This is about farm animals because it goes beyond chickens.
No, I'll give you when I was growing up on Virginia Street in the village of Baldwinsville, on Elizabeth Street, there lived a horse. For years and years, in a backyard, in an area that was not suitable for a horse, but there was no laws on the book, so the horse lived there until it died. Then they had to bring in a tow truck and drag it out of there. Right after that, they put in laws. You're right. I mean, there's certain areas that aren't suitable for farm animals. So we're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're going to look around and see what other municipalities have done. Specifically, I think we need to focus, obviously, in residential areas. We don't want it. Ag is ag, and that's what ag is for. So, Jim?
I was wondering why you're not including exotic animals and eliminating the question of domesticated and not domesticated.
Like cobras?
Anything.
Alligators? Anything. Well, I think the village...
language, Jim, that was included in the definition that I gave them. It says wild and other dangerous animals. Yeah. That's a way of...
Yeah, so you can't have a lion farm.
No emotional support peacocks.
Yep. Emotional support peacock.
Did you see the article about that?
No.
Is there emotional support peacock?
Yeah, they want to bring it on a plane.
Oh, jeez. Common sense. Where's that?
Gone. There is no.
It's gone. We're all entitled.
All right. Great discussion. This is the first step. We will put that on our agenda to talk to other supervisors at the Association of Towns, again, should that motion go through tonight. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it. Thanks for spearheading that. Yep. And please report back to your association that we are taking it up. Okay. Countywide Shared Services Initiative regarding e-tax. This is something that I think we should look at. It's not up and running yet. They're looking for a couple test markets. And basically what this is the county will, the county charges us $2 per parcel to calculate the taxes that are due. We collect them here. That won't change. That's not what they're... What they're proposing is utilizing their software for all the municipalities in Onondaga County to utilize their software to calculate taxes. They charge us now $2 per parcel to do that. If we agree to sign up in this intermunicipal cooperative agreement, they will cut that rate in half to $1. That means a savings of approximately, I put it in your,
it says,
around $9,000. Now again, we still collect the taxes here, they calculate them. I called the county.
Don Weber.
Talked to Don Weber. He said, Joe, I'm glad you're mentioning this. We're actually hoping that everybody's not interested all at once. We would like to do a trial, a soft rollout. But there's another plus to this. We are currently paying a vendor approximately $2,400 a year to do the same service for us. So not only will we save the a little over $9,000 in fees from the county, but we'll also save another $2,400 from the vendor. So $11,000 or $12,000 is what we're looking at savings by checking this out.
So why are they able to do this?
They have a software program that they've invested in, and they want to expand its capabilities. There's nothing about this to me that would hurt the level of service that our constituents get currently. Don has assured me that we will not have to call the vendor, the software vendor, for help, that he will have staff in place to take care of calls from tax collectors. The gist behind it is that you'll have one central location for attorneys to look up tax information. It's just centralized. It's everybody contributing to a software program that's universal, that can handle, instead of everybody having their own and paying more than really what we should be if this works out. The county executive thinks that this will save the county approximately $300,000, constituents in Onondaga.
What do you need from it? Are you going to do this?
I would like, yeah, I didn't want to sign it. I didn't want to sign it, but I...
It's letter E. I have a question. This dollar per parcel that we're saving,
yep,
or also that we're paying, is this like a introductory price, or is this...
I asked Don that. I go, is this a base... And he said it. I go, so Don, I kind of limped around it a little bit, and then he goes, well, bait and switch, is that what you're talking? He goes. I can't say. He said, that's not my decision, if at some point... But we could always go back... Exactly. To the old way, depending on, yeah, what the rate hikes were. But it's something that, from an intermunicipal cooperative effort, I don't see any downside to this, unless the thing just blows up. And the way that they're proposing rolling this out, it looks like it's very methodic. There's been a lot of thought put into this, and it's just one of those things that it's easy to say yes to. But I wanted the board to be familiar with it, because I wasn't familiar with it until... Nancy had heard. I talked with Nancy, their association. Nancy thought that it would be great. There are some in the Tax Collectors Association of Onondaga County that are wary of it, but there are also some tax collectors in Onondaga County that still use green books to record taxes. So I would guess that someone that's used to that way of collecting and calculating taxes might be uncomfortable with a software program doing it.
Do you have your copy to send back to him?
I do.
I don't think you do.
Oh, do you have it?
It was in my inbox.
How'd you get that?
I don't know.
I don't lock my door.
I don't have a copy now.
So the actual rates, property tax services billing for Lysander is $19,512. And that's at $2 a parcel. Obviously, you cut that in half, and that goes to $9,756 in savings, plus the $2,400 that we're paying our vendor.
When you talked to Don, did he say how many towns they would need before they rolled it out, or they're going?
No, but he said the fact that we reached out to him and that we showed some interest, we would. I think he'd throw us in there.
That's great. Good job.
Okay, so keep that in mind. Stormwater performance bond. This is an issue that I think is Al's been considering for some time, and I'll let him do the presentation.
So this was prompted as a result of some issues we've had with the Whispering Oaks 4 development and Cabbage Patch, and the developer's contractor not doing a good job of keeping the site under control from erosion and sediment control standpoint and doing construction process that was approved. After talking with Tony and one of the engineers that I used to work with at B&L, town of Hastings is in a situation right now where the racetrack that was started up there, they cleared and opened up a whole bunch of land, didn't stabilize anything as they were working, didn't construct stormwater management areas, and then went bankrupt. And now the DEC is leaning on the town in court for the town to clean up the mess because they signed the MS4 SWIP acceptance form. In this instance, in our instance with Whispering Oaks 4, the developer, when we gave him the stop work order, I said, you know, we want a $150,000 bond, performance bond, to say that this is going to be addressed so that, you know, the town isn't at risk any longer. He graciously provided us with that bond in this instance, but it was somewhat voluntary. Because we don't have any law stating that you need to put up a performance bond for stormwater management, he could have just as well said, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. And if it got to the point where he went bankrupt and the DEC stepped in, they could potentially look at the town to put up the funds to stabilize that site because we approved the stormwater pollution prevention plan.
One of the things that you should mention is the reason that the towns are obligated, mandated by the state to enforce the stormwater, the MS4 permits. Part of that mandate is you will enforce it, and it's really a DEC law, but they ask the towns to enforce it. The problem is the DEC or the state doesn't provide any money or any funds to do the enforcement. And what's going on in Hastings right now is theoretically the town could end up spending a lot of money because we're obligated to enforce it with no help from anybody. And this may be another topic when you go to the Association of Towns, because I know there's a lot of towns, there's a lot of towns talking about, hey, they want us to do this. Not only do they want you, they force you to do this, and they don't give you anything to do it with. DEC makes significant money from the permits. They get the fees. Towns don't get any of that. So,
perfect example of an unfunded mandate.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
Perfect.
100%.
As a
matter of fact, I'll tell you, Hastings, not saying anything out of school, they tried to get out of it, and they submitted an application to DEC, and DEC said, oh, we don't want to do anything to the towns. We're not going to hurt you. But they said, there's some federal wetlands, so we got to send this to Washington. And it got to Washington, and we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. But the town of Hastings wanted to get out of the MS4 thing. And what happens if you're not part of it, everything that comes through, you just have to get a separate permit. But it's a lot better than being on the hook. The problem with the racetrack is 100-some-odd acres that's unstabilized. And to stabilize it,
about $3,500 an acre under prevailing wage rates to hand seed and mulch.
Yeah. In addition, the DEC's laws can fine the developer and or the town $37,000 a day for violations.
But they won't help us enforce it.
Nope.
They'll just take the cash.
What they've said to us is, you know, we're not going after you, Tom, but when we sat there at a meeting last week or 2 weeks ago, the developer says, we're wrong. We didn't do what we were supposed to do, but we don't have any money. So the administrative judge looks to the town, what are you guys going to do? I said, Judge, if you want us to fix it, we'd have to go out and hire people. We don't have, our highway people can't do that kind of work. It would cost a significant amount of money, which we'd have to bond for to pay, and we'd have to raise taxes. Well, you know, nobody wants to do that. This is like the first one in the state that this has happened to. Because it's, you know, as the engineer, Dave Haney said, this is unprecedented area.
This is one of those beautiful economic incentive packages that just didn't make it. And in talking to Al,
it's something that we didn't do up there because they didn't have the money to post a bond. But it's something that if somebody can't post a bond and they're going to do significant work, you know, if they can't post the bonds, sorry, you know, we're not going to be responsible.
There's nothing about this that's... I mean, this should be a basic requirement. If you're going to disturb that much land, mm-hmm. and it's somewhat of a speculative effort to do a development, you don't know what you're going to run into.
Right, exactly.
You could hit whatever, and all of a sudden the project isn't feasible anymore. Someone walks away, and leaves the town hanging.
I enjoy.
So this is something I'm going to bring to the Stormwater Coalition at our next meeting, which is February 9th. Something like that. I think it's not next week, Tuesday, but the Tuesday after, whatever the date that is. So I don't know if we want to come up with language at the coalition level, or it does have to be a local law. So we would put it in our stormwater, amend our stormwater law to require the performance bond before we sign off on the MS4 SWIP acceptance form. I'll talk to the coalition and see if they want to put together draft language for all the coalition members to adopt, or I don't know if we want to go ahead
let's use their attorneys, the coalition's attorneys.
Okay. I don't know if they have attorneys. They don't have attorneys. Actually, I know they don't have attorneys on staff.
Well, let's have someone else.
Changing our code is easy. I mean, that's just...
I think you do one... There's a section on the MS4 SWIP acceptance reform right in front of letter in front of that, just put performance bond required before the town will sign the MS4 SWIP acceptance.
It's a change of it. No big
deal. Amount of performance bond to be determined by town engineer. Yeah. Period.
So why don't we do that tonight?
Well, it's local.
It's a local. Okay. So you got to set up public.
But why don't we do it?
We'll do a proposed local law for next meeting.
What's going through my head is you got to be kidding me. That's what I'm saying to myself.
Well, we're covered on our projects.
That's right now.
The one project that's given us a problem, we're covered on.
Are there other projects that are out there?
Well, we don't have. Tony can answer this better than me. We've already signed the MS4, the SWIP acceptance form for the other projects that are ongoing. So far, none of them have given us headaches like this one project has. I don't know if we can go back to the developers. I don't think there's any way to take the SWIP acceptance. I don't think there's any way to take the SWIP acceptance form away.
But until, I don't know, are there any projects up and coming within the next several?
Not right now, no.
I won't approve any until this thing is on.
We've got time to bring it next meeting.
Are there any other things like that out there that we can get bit in the rear end?
I brought it to your attention as soon as Tony and I talked about it 2 weeks ago, and after talking to Dave Haney and doing a little more research on what the MS4 code says.
But besides MS4, do you know of any other potentialities where we could be held liable if someone goes bankrupt?
Not really, no.
We're covered in other areas typically because once we
take dedication, we're covered.
Right.
So we could release this performance bond when we take dedication and put roll that erosion and sediment control measures into the punch list bond, which we already do.
Right.
But we don't take a bond until we take dedication of the roads and utilities.
Right. So this is just another area that we would require a performance bond on for drainage for a proposed project.
And we've got one voluntarily for $150,000.
Yeah, is that
going to cover it if they go bankrupt?
Yeah, we're in good shape. Right. It's more than adequate.
Al's numbers are conservative.
What the heck is going on up there?
The contractor just really has been uncooperative. Right now they're under a stop work order. We gave them a citation. They're appearing in front of the judge on the 13th of February, I believe.
Who's the contractor?
J.K. Tobin.
Really?
Yeah. So it's really, it's gone south. I think I've said all of this to all of you before. I got an injury because I like solving problems, not to be a cop. Unfortunately, the way that MS-4 law is written, they've made engineers that work for municipalities, you know.
And code enforcement.
And code enforcement officers responsible for that. You know, for me, that's not an easy decision to make. A stop work order really doesn't necessarily hurt. The people it hurts the most are the guys that are working for $12 an hour shoveling, more than the...
But it's good, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way it's got to be, but it's not anything that Tim nor I enjoy doing.
Right.
So this would be a, tell you what, you'd get a developer's attention if you say we're pulling your performance bond. If this isn't addressed within 10 days, they'll find a way to get in compliance. Because once you get a bond pulled, it's really hard to get another one. Mm-hmm. So,
Good. All right. Thanks. So you'll have language for us in 2 weeks?
Yeah. I'll email it to you ahead of the meeting. So you can review it, and then we'll set the public hearing on the at the next meeting for the first meeting in March.
Okay.
A couple other things. At our public information meeting for the sidewalk, Roman and Pete and Joe were there. Had several people ask for speed study on Oswego Street from Henkel Boulevard to the village limit. Actually, I was out there today, and yeah, cars are moving along at a pretty good clip. I would say people crossing Country Lane and Gideon's Crest entrance.
It's 50 plus.
I would say closer to 65 in a lot of instances. I was sitting at the intersection trying to pull out of Gideon's Crest.
You might be sitting there for a while.
Well and people are cooking. I mean, there's not a ton of sight distance there at that intersection because of the crest vertical curve. I bet you people are going over 60.
Well, they used to have a cop right at the, I think it's a chiropractor now, but they'd have a cop sitting there all the time, and he was just constantly pulling people over.
Yeah, I mean, people are, they're moving.
Yeah.
So it's certainly worth considering.
I would support a speed study request.
The back part of our park goes to Route 48 as well. So if we ever had intentions of putting a parking area back there, that would...
I would say that we ask from Henkel all the way to the village line. Exactly. They may not reduce it the whole way, but they may, you know, as you approach the Gideon's Crest, Country Lane, the Coachman's Whip.
I would add that to the agenda. That seems like a reasonable thing to do. All we're doing is asking for a study.
Yeah.
Write a math.
Can't hurt you.
Okay.
And the other thing, I forwarded you all a bunch of emails today. Steve Darkangelo, the village engineer, is in the process of updating their water emergency plan. In the process of reviewing that document, he found an old map that laid out a wellhead protection district for the Doane wells, which are outside of the village along 370 there west of Seneca Estates.
River Bend.
This was looked at back in 1998. The map was developed in 1998. It was brought up at the town board in 99, sent to the planning board. The planning board made a recommendation that, this is a good idea. This is something we should do. Went back to the town board, and the town board said they would consider addressing it in the updated comprehensive land use plan, or when they did the updated comprehensive land use plan. It never got included. It never got acted on. If you review the documents, a lot of it's common sense stuff. It is a sensitive aquifer that provides water to,
thousands.
Yeah, thousands of Town of Lysander residents. It's certainly worth bringing back to the front burner and at least taking a look at it and giving it a consideration. It seems like all of it, from my review, seems like common sense stuff that people should want to do anyway from a pesticides and petroleum standpoint. It really is a lot of best management practices that most farmers are already implementing anyway. I know it's a rural area town, but it really does, from an environmental standpoint, make sense to consider it. So there's quite a bit there in what I sent you. take some time, look it over. It would be a local law. It would be amended to their zoning code. But it does seem like it would be, especially in this day and age when we know water resources. I mean, granted, here in upstate New York, we're blessed with plentiful water supplies. However, that's a very good water supply, very good water on a very rich aquifer that you know, common sense says we should protect.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, we'll read that. Yeah, thanks for sending that out.
There's
everybody.
Quite a bit of, like I said, it'll take you a little bit to get through it. It took me an hour and a half or so today to read through it and wrap my head around it. But
so, is there an action step you want?
No. Right now, I want everybody to review it before we go any further.
It was emailed to you today.
Yeah, I emailed it to you today. My email has a bunch of emails attached to it with attachments to them. Mm-hmm. Look them over. You know, we can put it on for a work session item next week. If everybody looks it over before the meeting, just anybody has questions, feel free to reach out to me. If it's something that, you know, everybody seems to make sense to everybody, we could do same thing, set a public hearing at the next meeting for the first meeting in March to look at doing a local law.
All right.
Certainly a common sense thing that should be considered.
At that meeting, there was one other thing mentioned, a stop sign.
Four-way, yeah.
Yeah, four-way stop.
Really is speed control. There's no sight distance. There is some tree limbs that we can talk to Jerry about trimming up. There's really other than some coachman's whips and hourglass, the four-way.
Can you check that out, Jerry?
Yeah.
They want to put a stop sign on 48.
No.
In the development, they want a four-way.
There's a two-way stop now. Oh. They want to make it a four-way.
And you know, I've said it hundreds of times to you guys in the past. Stop signs really aren't for speed. They want a four-way because they say people are speeding through the development, which is people that live in the development. Because nobody else goes in the development really, other than you know a few garbage trucks and the mailmen. But it's. You know, from a purely engineering standpoint, it doesn't pass the warrant analysis for a four-way stop. It certainly could use a little tree trimming, but from a warrant analysis for a stop sign, it doesn't pass the muster.
All right, well, let's take a look at it anyways. It won't take anything for us to go out there and see what they're seeing, you know. Let's look at the trees.
It's actually one of the things I was looking at when I was down in there today.
Yeah. So, look at those trees, Jerry. See if they need trimming up. And I would just get familiar with it since it's a highway issue. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bill. I received a call today from a resident on Kilo Road about odor complaints. This is getting... I've heard this now probably four times in the last month and a half about odor emanating from the plant, the Seneca Knowles plant. And it was mentioned that there's been a change in guard on the odor control person there. Funding was supposed to have been secured for odor control. I don't know if I just received this today, but Al, why don't you and I talk to... Tom Rhodes at WEP and see what's going on over there. See if we get a handle on it.
I know they're going through some improvements right now. so my guess, the odor complaints they're getting is I think one of their aeration tanks is shut down, so they're trying to run everything through one aeration tank, which may be a contributing factor until that project is completed. But
okay, so if we can get some idea on completion date on that. Yeah,
I know it was scheduled to be, they started it last fall, scheduled to be a year-long project.
I'll give you this person's number for a follow-up. Next time you call in...
shoot me an email. I'll get a hold of Tom.
Tom Rhodes.
I'll call the plant operator and talk to him directly.
Okay. All right. Excellent. I guess, and does anybody have anything that they'd want to add?
Yeah, I do. I was just curious if you had any more update on that that communication between Brian May and you about WEP's fee increase.
Yes, I was going to mention that in supervisor comments.
Okay.
I can do it now.
Or whatever.
Or you want to wait?
If you want to mention it then, I'll be happy.
Yeah,
then.
Okay.
And then are we, what's going on with this Lysander Preserve Prevention petition? Should we talk about that? Do we? I don't know what to make of it.
Change.org. Someone went on change.org and did started an online petition, and every person that signs it, I get an update on who that was.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know what the tally is. I mean, I guess we
I don't know if
there.
I care about the tally, but I just was curious about. It's an interesting question. I mean, they're asking us to not allow advancement of the project until the existing project is completed. Do we have any say in that?
Do we have any authority there?
Probably not. If it's been approved by the planning board.
And I'm wondering if Jack and Al can just. All I want to do is get a set of brains on this because it's a curious thing that I'm. This petition.
And I can't quite make heads or tails of it either. But so from a development standpoint, the developer can't file the final plat for more than 64 lots, which phase one and two equals 64 lots, until the road for the connecting road to Guineas Crest in phase three is constructed. At last count, I think there's 10 lots left in phase two. Merriam Meadows, where Ryan went to, has sold out, and they're coming back into Lysander Preserve, Highland Meadows, this summer, and are going to be going full bore. So the developer wants to get ahead of them and put the Phase 3 road in. They have approved construction drawings. They have approved preliminary plat. From a public safety standpoint right now, we've got 54 houses on a big cul-de-sac, which is... You know, you always want two entrances when you have a significant number of homes. So from a public safety standpoint, the town should encourage the developer to get that connecting road done as soon as possible. Actually, that was one of the big topics of discussion in the preliminary plat approval at the planning board level was that, hey, we really don't like the idea of having too many houses with only one access road. There's ever an accident, that road becomes impassable, something to that nature. You want to have people another way for people to get out. There's a very large water transmission main that is parallel to that entrance road. If that ever went away or went loose and washed out the road, you got 54 people that can't get out of their house or back to their house.
Emergency services to them.
Or emergency services to them. So from a public safety standpoint, we would want to see that road constructed.
And we have a say in that.
We've already approved it.
Okay. So I guess.
Well, I guess his question was, can we prevent it? Is it within our power to prevent a startup in phase three when two is still?
I'm not saying I want to do that. I'm just curious what our.
Do we even have the ability to do what this petition is asking us to do?
I don't believe so because we passed a resolution approving that.
What's that?
I do not believe the town board has that ability.
And I don't. Because we've approved the construction drawings for it.
In the interest of respecting these people, instead of them going to all this trouble of getting this petition signed, they can do it, but should we not get back to them and say there's nothing we can do about this?
Yeah, I didn't know whether or not at some point it comes to a head and they present the petition, or if this is just an ongoing effort. I've not participated.
I mean, from looking at the names on the petition, it appears the majority of them don't live in the development. One guy signed it from Fayetteville or something.
This is an online petition.
Yeah.
There's people from Marcellus all over on that petition who are against urban sprawl and development. They're responding to it.
And I guess I wasn't so concerned about this particular thing. I was just asking a question in the principle of it. Let's just say that there was a serious concern by residents of a half-finished development, and they asked, they're not even finished with this one, and we'd like you to make sure that they continue finishing this before they go on to the next phase. I'm saying to myself, that's probably the reasonable thing, but we have no right to say anything. It's a done deal.
And even the planning board, I mean, they've approved the preliminary plat. The planning board could hold them up in accepting the final plat for phase three, potentially, if they wanted to what ends that is good for the town. I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, what grounds would you do it on?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, you can get a flat... The way the planning board set it up, this was before I was chairman, but I was on... In fact, I just joined the board when this happened. But as Al said, there was a great deal of discussion with regard to this matter. So when they changed their original approach from a, what was it, Al, five-phase to a three-phase?
Four-phase to, four to a three they went to.
So they went through phase one. They complete phase two, that's 64 units. And their agreement was that when they have sold 64 lots.
By the time they've sold 64 lots, they need to have.
They have to.
Construct the road.
Construct that road.
And how many are they at? 54,
I believe.
Okay. So when I read the petition, what I saw in there, it was some people who were concerned, and I'm talking about the residents who live there now, not these other people who are signing this petition, that they live in phase two, and they're concerned that the developer is going to move on to phase three and not focus on selling all the phase two lots, and they don't want to be left with empty lots around them. Right. But he really can't move on until he sells those lots under the agreement we get. Isn't that correct, Al?
No, not necessarily. I don't think so. No, I think the way we read it, I think as I recall, the way the resolution is worded is he must have the connecting road constructed before any more building permits above number 64. So permit number 65, to get permit number 65, he has to have the road constructed to Guinea's Crest.
And he actually wants to complete it sooner rather than later.
He just wants to be ahead of the game because to get these, quite frankly, the process to develop, to construct stormwater, sewer, water, grading, the road, get National Grid, Verizon, Time Warner Cable in there, it's approximately an 6 to 8 month process minimum, and that's with National Grid
cooperating.
So the reality of it is, if they start construction of this now, or we actually had a pre-construction meeting for this phase last week, and they're looking within the next 2 weeks to go up there and take down the remaining trees that need to be taken down, and start doing cut fills and construct the stormwater pond. This is February. They're not going to have that road constructed and ready for dedication until October, more than likely.
So there's no logical reason to prevent him from moving on. And quite honestly, we don't have any authority.
We have no authority.
No.
And that's what I wanted to know.
And we've already agreed and approved it.
Okay.
Yeah. So from a public safety standpoint,
we want to encourage him
to get that done as soon as possible.
So should we be getting back to these folks and let them know that, or let it play out?
I don't even know. I'll research into how you respond to a moveon.org petition. I don't know.
I think we send only letters to the homeowners that are in the development and explain the public safety issue to them and why the town, it's in their interest and the town's interest to see that road constructed sooner rather than later. It really is a...
Yeah, I think, Joe, you think about this and do what you think is right, but to be proactive and just say, look, we're getting these things in. I just want to bring you guys up to speed on what the...
Yep.
And send the letters to those homeowners, and in fact, all the homeowners, and just say, and just be proactive, like be ahead of the game, one step ahead.
I'll have Teresa get the lots and...
There's district boundaries up there, so she can print.
We'll do it on both sides, both neighborhoods that it's connecting to, because there's probably concern on both sides, the neighborhood that it's going into, which is
Giddings Crest.
Giddings Crest. Did you see anybody in Giddings Crest signing this thing?
I didn't notice anybody. No.
You think they'd have some concern?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're. I guess I don't know. Their concern would be just the opposite. They don't want it constructed, period, because their fear was it's going to add more traffic.
Right, but if I'm heading to 690, the fastest way from there is through their neighborhood.
Yep, absolutely. Do I think it's going to? Actually, I don't know if it's the fastest way. I think the fastest way is down the hill to 370 and get on it. At 690, 370 interchange rather than going north and then coming back south. I think you'd go.
You're right.
So you'd still go across Mercer Street out to Dexter Parkway and down to 370. I mean, or I would at least. I mean, why are you going to go north to come back south? It doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
Right, we'll check it out. Let's say the majority of traffic. There are many people going to Fulton.
City of the future. All right. Thanks, Al. Jerry, you had it.
Family Leave Act.
Family Leave Act. I talked to David. I thought that we would also discuss that at the Association of Towns to get a broad perspective of what other towns are looking at. David thought that that was more than reasonable. If you guys are fine with that, that's just one more thing we'll put on our agenda. Jerry, you had an item that you wanted to add to the agenda? Was it a new hire?
Yeah.
You want to come sit with us?
Be our guest.
I don't really do it from here. Not too big of a hero. You have been summoned.
Okay. You have 5 minutes.
I don't even need five. You just want to know who it is and what we're doing?
Did you interview the guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Name's Corey Bean, local resident, wants to work part-time wingman, and we currently could use him. So
has he started?
No, he could start as soon as tomorrow morning if the snow flies like it's supposed to.
More snow on the way?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
How are you doing as far as filling? Do you need more people? I mean, are you falling short?
I've got
last year it was an issue.
Yeah, I've got a couple other applicants. The problem we have is we have some names on the list that we really can't use. You know, there are those names that have been on the list forever. And we're going to take a moment here when we get through this season and make contact with those individuals and see how many are interested in being carried forward to next year.
Sure, I, from my vantage, and I think I can speak for everybody, you should feel comfortable for having as many people on that list as possible. Mm-hmm. So you should never fall into a situation like, oh my God, who am I going to have this weekend? Because, you know, the fact that we put them on doesn't mean they're actually drawing a paycheck until they actually get in the truck. So have those names. So you're going to not see any opposition from us.
Okay. Well, what I'm seeing is, you know, there's some names that have been carried for years and years, and they're people that we really don't call and use because they're unavailable at this time. We've got one guy that's been very regular, but he's been off injured. So that put us back a man.
But even if you need more people, Jerry, I mean, maybe put a story in the Messenger. You know, Ashley would... we'd be more than happy to run something.
Okay.
Like that.
The difficult part is sometimes we get them on the list, and then it doesn't snow for a week or two, and then they're like, "Gee, you guys ever going to utilize me?" You know, and then they get stale on the list. So we do have to keep fresh names coming on the list constantly.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is our latest fresh one. I got another applicant, but I have to talk to him first. So
absolutely.
Okay.
I have a question for Jer and Al, actually, and it was a note that I sent to you, Joe, and Pete, and Bob, since you're on the committee. I'm just looking for a heads up on when we're going to get a presentation on the 2018 road projects.
Very soon.
And March. I want to make sure that on that list...
March.
And on that list, we're going to be addressing, by saying, you know, the culvert issue, the guardrails on culverts. Okay.
We're making a case. We should at the next meeting, I think the town should get more active in going after CDBG money, mm-hmm. community development block grants. We have a very, very small, isolated location in the town that's eligible for those types of grants. We're making the case right now that the spray park, and the fact that we have one park in the town. That the residents in the town, they utilize that of all incomes. But we also noticed that some of the culverts that were mentioned fall into that area, and we called community development in the city of Syracuse, and they said that we could make a case from a public safety issue, kids that are being picked up out there driving over those culverts in a bus. So what we need to do, the village would do this every single year, we need to put together a 5-year plan. We need to come up with four or five projects that we think meet the criteria of CDBG. Put that up. I believe it calls for.
This would be a 3-year.
We don't have five, but we should. We have some projects that we should apply for, but we'll have. What I'd like to do, maybe in the perfect committee to look at this, is the highway committee. Look at, that's how we used to roll it through in the village, because the highway, there's infrastructure issues, and in the village, highway handled most of the parks as well. We got a lot of money from parks. We probably went 5 or 6 years in a row in getting back-to-back-to-back CDBG money. It started with sidewalks, and it ended up in park improvements, which with kiddie parks. If you go to Mercer Park, the kiddie park that's there. If you go to McCary Park, there. The bathrooms in Lions Park, those are upgrades. Again, sidewalks. We need to start focusing on that. So maybe if the highway committee can meet in the next couple weeks, come up with a list of projects to present to the board. Board have an opportunity to talk about it, and then I think we have to put that up for a public hearing. There might be a public hearing required for the list, and then we just apply.
Well, what was the other one we just got made aware of today? The one I came over and pointed out to you, and you already had a copy.
Oh, the Bridge New York. The Bridge New York is making.
That's a big one. Yeah, we've had success.
We were very successful the last round. There's a couple more culverts I'm going to go after on Willett Parkway, Drake's Landing. Last I looked at the most recent traffic count, I can't recall. I don't know if there's enough traffic on Drake's to qualify for that program, but I know there is on Willett, and there are a couple more cross culverts that we could go after.
We're working on it.
Yeah, I mean, just keep going after the grant money.
So in March, you'll come back with a project?
Yeah, we really, this winter, freeze and thaw that we've had, we're going to see some damage this spring.
Oh, yeah.
And we kind of want to, Jerry and I both have an idea of projects we'd like to do, but we kind of want to see how everything looks after the frost starts to come out of the ground this spring.
We got the one unexpected, West Entry Road.
I wouldn't say it's unexpected.
It went bad fast.
Yeah,
this winter.
West of the railroad tracks and just east of the railroad tracks, there's some significant issues.
Yep.
All right.
Good.
Could I leave now?
Yeah. your motion will be added.
It's all cops.
Are there any other issues you want to raise?
Good. We've covered a lot.
Good.
Yeah, it was a great, great war session. All right, so we're not going to adjourn the meeting. We're just, I guess, not going to talk anymore about any items.
It's not going to talk to you for a minute.